Election Night in Minnesota continues on News Radio 830 WCCO, WCCO HD, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
CBS News. I'm Jim Shemby. 244 to 197. That's the CBS News electoral count total right now. But it may surprise many to know it's Donald Trump with the current lead. In the battleground state, CBS News now projecting Trump has won Florida, Ohio, and North Carolina, while Hillary Clinton is a projected winner in Virginia and Colorado. Let's go live to Trump headquarters in New York and correspondent Barry Bagnato.
A sea of red across the electoral map and in the hotel ballroom here where jubilant Trump supporters wave red hats with every new state he claims the presidency very much within his reach. The cheers began early when someone rolled in a huge cake with Trump's likeness bursting out of it, and they've increased in intensity as he has busted expectations. Exit polls reveal a working-class revolt, and while most voters expressed serious concerns about Trump's treatment of women, the gender gap was not as great as anticipated in the polls. Live at Hillary Clinton headquarters, here's CBS's Steve Futterman.
And Barry, it's the worst sign at any election night headquarters. People leaving early before it's over. But that's what people are doing here at Clinton headquarters. A steady stream departing the Javits Center, and they are not very happy.
We're devastated. I'm hoping it'll change, but it's unbelievable. I mean, how could the polls be so off?
One of the election night's key races, as usual, was Florida. It went to Donald Trump. Let's go live to Orlando. CBS News correspondent Peter King.
And Trump calls Florida his second home. Our CBS News exit poll shows that white voters here went for him by a nearly 2-1 margin. 7 in 10 non-whites voted for Hillary Clinton. She did about the same as Barack Obama did with Latinos 4 years ago, but worse with black voters. The Latino split is particularly interesting. 7 in 10 non-Cuban Hispanics voted for Clinton, but most Cuban Americans voted for Trump. I'm Peter King, live in Orlando, now with more CBS News. Here's Jim Shenevy.
Donald Trump was expected to face a tough road in winning over women voters. How has the gender card played in this election? CBS News polling analyst Fred Backus is with us live.
While there was some talk of Republican women defecting from their nominee or perhaps not showing up, Republican women are voting in the same proportion as they did 4 years ago, and 9 in 10 are voting for Donald Trump. Women overall, however, do favor Clinton by about 12 points, and she garners her strongest support from women under 45. Black and Hispanic women, and white women with college degrees.
And CBS News now projecting Hillary Clinton has won the state of Washington. 12-term Republican Congressman John Mica has lost his Florida seat to Democrat Stephanie Murphy. Mica, in a district that's become increasingly Democratic in recent years. In the Senate, Illinois Republican Mark Kirk has been tossed by Democrat Tammy Duckworth. Kirk suffered a stroke in 2012 and was considered vulnerable. Marco Rubio easily winning re-election to the Senate in Florida. In Arizona, Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio has lost his job. This is CBS News.
This is Election Night in Minnesota, sponsored by Hamline University on News Radio 830 WCCO and WCCO.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 11:03. Certainly the major storyline is what is taking place with the presidential election. On a night where there were significantly more paths to victory for Hillary Clinton, has it reached a point right now where there are significantly more paths to victory for Donald J. Trump? We'll get back to that in a matter of minutes, but a lot is taking place here at the state level, from the congressional races to an amendment to, Adam, also what's going on with the state Senate and state House. What's the latest for us, sir?
And paths to victory for Republican Congress,
yes,
in Minnesota. But right. Eric Paulson, Tom Emmer returning to Congress. Very right. Close race in the first district, surprisingly.
That's one of the biggest surprises,
absolutely.
Right?
Let's go to the Republican Party headquarters where Susie Jones is at. That is the Radisson Blue at the Mall of America. Susie, I would imagine that the mood is pretty good there.
That's right, Adam. This place is packed with people cheering as big states continue to be called for Donald Trump here. Every time it happens, they burst out with big shouts and cheers and chants. Now, here in Minnesota, as you mentioned, there were three hotly contested congressional races, one of them the third, between incumbent Republican Eric Paulson and Terry Bonner. Paulson spoke with reporters with the crowd here a short time ago.
Voters are speaking loudly. They are speaking clearly. They want to fix a broken Washington. They want to see some things get done. And hopefully tonight we will see some more victories coming to Minnesota with Stuart Mills in the eighth, with Jason Lewis in the second. And of course with my colleague Tom Emmerich, so we don't have to caucus in the phone booth. We have an opportunity to bring home some more conservative principles to the state of Minnesota.
And Adam, the outcome still not clear in the eighth, as he mentioned, between Stuart Mills and Rick Nolan, and in the other race between Jason Lewis and Angie Craig, the second. Two races where millions of dollars was spent on those campaigns. And for more on what's going on in the Democratic Party, Edgar Linares is live at the party there downtown Minneapolis. Edgar, I imagine it's a lot different.
Oh, Susie, you can say that. Yeah, very, very different here, the mood than what you're seeing. Many not able to take anymore. They're leaving the ballroom, heading home. Some in tears. They just want to watch the results privately, they tell me. Now, those left silent and stunned watching Donald Trump take the lead. Audrey Brooks says she's genuinely scared of a Trump presidency.
You gotta wake up to that tomorrow. You can imagine what kind of country are we gonna be living in. Everybody wants change, but we're not paying attention to the change when he calls us all kind of names. And it's okay for him to be the president. The world is looking at this. I was just international and I go to church and they were praying for America election. Could you imagine that? Everyone is watching. You go to the schools and the kids are talking about it.
Amy Klobuchar spoke to the nervous crowd moments ago, telling them no matter who wins, we need to learn to work together. People here cautiously optimistic, but like I said, many people have already left. They just want to watch this at home, see how it unfolds. Live in downtown Minneapolis, Edgar Linares, WCCO.
All right, Chad Hartman here back with you. I want to reset everybody. Jordana Green is monitoring social media. Adam Carter is here. Brian McClung, Catherine Tanucci, Blois Olson, Chris Elston, Kyle Sheely, Lindsay Peterson, Bob Schomper, and let's, Blois, again just review one of the points, because we're doing a lot of projecting too, but let's just point out, we have four televisions in here just to show a bit of the disparity on certain projections the networks are making and certain projections certain networks are not. CBS and ABC both have called enough races right now to have it 244-209 Donald Trump. Fox has it 254-209 for Donald Trump, and CNN has it 232-209. It is extraordinarily rare when a network calls a state and they have to call it back, but it does show how close some of these states are where projections have already taken place, including, as example, Wisconsin. Fox has already called Wisconsin. Other outlets have not. As you look at some of that data with Wisconsin, do you see any scenario where Hillary Clinton still can win the state, even with Ron Johnson winning over Russ Feingold?
I guess the only scenarios would be that the precincts that are still out are so big, for instance, University of Wisconsin-Madison, that there's tens of thousands of votes, or there in Milwaukee, because those are highly concentrated. But Ron Johnson's already been projected the winner. The percentage
by a reasonable margin.
A reasonable margin. The percentage of those precincts that's still out, I have a tough time believing that she can make up 60, 70, 80,000 votes. I don't know how they've counted their absentees. Are their absentees still out, or do they get counted after? So there's a lot of factors kind of county by county and state by state that we still have to watch.
Brian, could we face a situation with some of these states? We talked about the manager. It might be time for us to look at the recall process in multiple states, that what the margin needs to be before we get a mandatory look at the balloting itself and thus the recount.
Right. Yeah, and one of those states that you might want to do a refresh on is Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Because right now in the vote in Pennsylvania, Trump just pulled ahead. And so that's been a state, obviously, that, you know, has been a Clinton must-win state, and that she's been ahead in the late polls. But now they have a little under 84% reporting in Pennsylvania. And they both have right around 2.6 million votes, but Trump now is just barely ahead in that state. So that's going to be a real close one. And that's a game over situation, obviously. If Trump wins Pennsylvania, that's 20 electoral votes.
Catherine,
it's a big state.
Catherine, if we look at just the Fox projection, okay, if he somehow wins, that's 274. It's literally game over. If it's CBS and ABC, that gets to 264. CNN is the most conservative. That would get to 252. In your most optimistic scenario, there really is an optimistic scenario where she is the president of the United States if Donald Trump wins Pennsylvania, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Right?
Not what we've been expecting. We're still watching the votes come in, though, and in Pennsylvania, I think there's still plenty to see and to learn and to count as the night goes on from Pennsylvania.
Chad, it's good that Catherine is so optimistic. Internationally, not so much, according to social media.
Yeah.
Breaking news, the Japanese stock market index, the Nikkei, is down more than 1,000 points. That's more than 6%.
Wow.
The Times of Israel said, sad and shocking what is going on, but we will survive.
Do we have any...
Canadian immigration website has crashed numerous times due to high traffic.
Wow. How about Russia? It might be time to... Is Vladimir on Twitter? I mean, considering the belief of the role that Russia and the government was playing, Mr. Trump, are there any Russian media outlets we could see what they're reporting this? Maybe time to look at that. What else are you seeing? Anything else that jumps out?
I'll look for the mushroom media. The Trump campaign, obviously there's one person now managing all of their Twitter.
Yeah,
they have been
right.
Banned from Twitter.
Yeah.
So Don Jr. and Ivanka, even Pence, he sent out one tweet to someone he supported. But there is no word from any of the Trump Twitter accounts other than a report from USA Today that says they're popping champagne already at the Trump building in Washington, D.C.
Blois, it's over your shoulder more often than not. Just to set it up, we have four TVs in here, but it is CBS that continually shows live shots from the Javits Center. This is where Hillary Clinton's victory party was expected to take place. We should point out again that the two candidates' parties are less than 2 miles apart. He is at the Hilton. She is at the Javits Center. There's no doubt there was symbolism because the room was set up with what? A glass ceiling,
right?
The glass ceiling that she was going to cite becoming the first female president. And when they show the Javits Center, numerous times they are showing people sobbing,
yes,
stunned, and yes, leaving.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing that we have to recognize on both sides of this race is the passion and the belief of their core supporters, especially for Clinton. Numerous people, this was a very emotional thing, the first woman president. And for Trump, there was a lot of passion, and it was fueled in many ways by anger. And so I think you're starting to see that. It's very common for people to be upset when their candidate loses and cry.
Yep.
I think it's earlier than anybody thought, and it's these states where they really thought that they were in pretty good shape. It now looks like, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, that he's staying very competitive, and actually one of those two states could get called here, I'd say, in the next 30 to 45 minutes, and if one of them gets called for Trump, it's over.
Adam, how many times do we talk about it over the last 18 months, going back to when he came down the escalator, the sheer excitement, the loyalty for Trump voters? And then when we looked the last 6 months and it became these two, and we would have this conversation about when Trump would have rallies, not all of them, but many of them, there would be thousands of people there. And there would be people waiting, and you'd see the Clinton events, and it wouldn't be nearly the enthusiasm. And we try to temper that and say, well, let's just remember, that is such a small example of what is taking place. But so often in these races, the candidate who has the more energized voting base, as opposed to the one who it's his, or in this case, her turn to run, wins. And that is also a part of the storyline tonight if he ends up winning this race.
It's absolutely the storyline. And how many times
in those last 18 months do we say, well, this is the incident or this is the comment that is going to end his campaign? And at every turn, he and his supporters have proven us wrong. And it looks like he's proven us wrong again tonight.
So, Brian, let me go back to one of your points last hour, because I thought it was a very good one. What would this say about a ground game? You think back to even the 2012 race, when people did the excellent reporting on that and said, you know what, when you looked at the modern way to run a campaign, that the Obama folks were just that much better than Romney's campaign. As thorough as Romney's campaign was, as well connected as it was with the RNC, Donald Trump has none of that. He has none of that. He has a difficult relationship with mainstream Republicans. It's been back and forth with the RNC. He doesn't have the people out there to make the calls. And what Trump would say is, I don't need that. I am a brand on to myself, and I can look at this in a more modern way. And if he wins, maybe it's a one-off, a little bit like Jesse went in 98, but he would be right on that idea.
Well, and that's something that, you know, we mentioned that I'm co-teaching a class at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs right now. And that's what we're talking about with our students this fall, is where have the rules changed, right? What things are different than they used to be in political elections? And where are these things that it's just Donald Trump as a phenomenon? And it's not all one or the other. There's some of each and each of these things. But one of the questions that we talked about in our class last night is, what does this mean for a ground game? Does it turn out that maybe you don't need a ground game? Maybe you just need a candidate who can inspire and drive that kind of enthusiasm and excitement. And that's one of the things we've been talking about over the last several days, is that, you know, the rally at the airport, all of these things were showing that Trump did indeed have enthusiasm, but there's a difference between enthusiasm and planning. And the typical response has always been that planning matters more.
Right.
That having people who are going to knock on the doors and make phone calls and, you know, send reminder emails and text messages and have that very coordinated ground game, that's worth a few percentage points. And that really matters. You have to do that. And Trump didn't. I mean, just didn't do that here or anywhere that I'm aware of. And so he is really kind of turning the, you know, politics on its head in that sense, that we've all felt like you need to invest in data and a ground game. And he's just kind of blowing that out of the water at this point.
Catherine, pick up on that, because clearly you have been well connected to this party for a long, long time. Data driven, it would win in the end. It's the modern way to do it. And he apparently did this and said, no, I'm taking it even further. I'm more modern than this. And he might be right.
I like Brian, I also teach. I teach in a graduate program at Metro State.
Adam, why aren't we teaching? I mean,
why? Have you heard the show?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Carter.
Wait a second. Yeah.
I teach a class called Organizing and Communications for Advocacy. I literally teach this stuff. I don't know. I'm a. You see me. I teach communications. I teach organizing. I'm a bit at a loss of what to say. Other than we've never seen anything quite like Donald Trump. Apparently, I guess if I'm, I expect we'll never see anything quite like it again. I do think this. I don't necessarily think this has just changed the rules. It's changed the rules, but I don't think it means that that all of our future presidents are going to be reality stars and that it's all about this celebrity. I think that there's going to be some. I mean, should Donald Trump be elected president, I think there will be significant backlash to that in a way that will make sure it doesn't happen again. But hard to predict right now.
Kyle is monitoring what is taking place in Pennsylvania. We're going to go to a CBS update here at 20. So in less than a minute, we'll come back and react after that. But right now in Pennsylvania, where Pat Toomey ran, and Pat Toomey lost, correct, Kyle? Did Pat Toomey win?
It's not done yet because there's only
Most
one percentage point.
Okay. I thought most people thought he would lose. So wait and see if it does. But right now, Donald Trump is outperforming Senator Pat Toomey by 30,000 votes, which would show you again that there are people who normally would not vote for the Republican candidate or the Republican Party, and they are voting for Donald Trump in Pennsylvania. And that is taking place in numerous states all across the country. The storyline tonight is clearly that Donald Trump is winning the battleground states. And as according to multiple projections, won Wisconsin and needs one more state to maybe become the next president.
CBS News Special Report, Election 2016.
Midnight has come and gone in the East. The White House race is not yet decided, but Donald Trump leads it with 244 of 270 electoral votes he needs to become America's 45th president. We start at his headquarters, correspondent Barry Bagnato.
President Donald Trump, what many Americans considered inconceivable, is now the most likely outcome of one of the most extraordinary presidential elections in U.S. history. Through this long night, supporters here have gone from hopeful to happy to hyper, and now they're waiting for what they expect will be a victory speech very soon. Not the same mood at Clinton headquarters. CBS's Steve Futterman joins us live.
Barry, shock, disbelief, anger. If these are emotions that can actually be written on the faces of human beings, that's what we are seeing here at Clinton headquarters. There are a few supporters still holding out hope for a miracle, but most of the people who came here to celebrate are now leaving, believing that Hillary Clinton will not win this race. Tom?
A key factor for Trump's suburban women voters.
In Michigan, he's winning them by 10 points over Clinton. In Wisconsin, Trump is winning suburban white women by 7 points. In Pennsylvania, Trump is winning suburban white women by 2 points. In Ohio, Trump is winning them by 10 points. So he has managed to keep suburban women in his column in those particular states.
Correspondent Nora O'Donnell, CBS News Special Report. I'm Tom Foti.
Minnesota's election station, News Radio 830, WCCO. You're listening to Election Night in Minnesota on News Radio 830, WCCO, and WCCO.com.
Let's concentrate this segment on what is taking place with our state, with the state capitol, with everyone up for re-election. Obviously, this is a year when the governor and the two senators are not up for re-election. Mark Dayton, we can get to that race at some point. The idea who will be the combatants when we convene here 2 years from now, and where we're at with Amy Klobuchar's future. Obviously, she's going to be up also, and Al Franken has a few more years. But, Blois, what is standing out right now with the Senate and the House? We've seen switching back and forth. What is the latest on those two races?
I'll look at the Minnesota House little by little. For instance, longtime incumbent Ron Ehrhardt lost in Edina to Dario Anselmo. Republicans lost the Bloomington seat, Chad Anderson seat, so that's a wash. It looks like, I mean, if Democrats aren't picking up some of these suburban seats, and it looks like a lot of the second district legislative seats are still out. There's still a lot of votes there, and Democrats had a lot of hope for those. And then the Iron Range in northern Minnesota is still out, too. But where there is results, it looks like in the Minnesota House, if I had to call it right now, I'd say Republicans will hold a majority.
And how many seats do the Democrats need to win to claim the majority?
Seven.
Okay,
yeah,
Brian,
and it looks like, if anything, maybe Republicans will add a seat or two to their majority right now.
Okay.
Which is surprising, right? The conventional wisdom headed into tonight was that I think most of us who live in this world were thinking that Republicans would probably maintain control of the House, Democrats would probably maintain control of the Senate, but their majorities would get smaller.
Yep.
And I don't know that that's the case, right? Because in the Minnesota Senate, to pick up, Boyce was talking about the House, but in the Minnesota Senate, Republicans have at least two pickups right now. The mayor of Faribault, John Jasinski, is going to beat Vicky Jensen in a district that includes Faribault and Owatonna. We mentioned earlier that Paul Anderson is going to win in what was a Democrat-held seat in Plymouth and part of Minnetonka.
Very competitive race.
And so there's, yeah, exactly. It'll be the most spending on any of the legislative races. When that all gets tallied, it'll probably be around $1 million that will have been spent by outside groups in that state Senate race.
How rare is that, to have in a state Senate race that type of money?
Well, it happened 2 years ago in the race in St. Cloud for state representative, and also that's a very close race that hasn't been called yet. Representative Jim Knobloch and Zach Dorholt, who was previously in the legislature. That race last time, I think, was in the, you know, close to $1 million. It was in, you know, $800,000 plus range. And so it's happening more with more frequency now. And keep in mind that this year in Minnesota, there was no governor's election and there was no U.S. Senate election. So with no top of the ticket races, that's where a lot of the money would typically be spent. And so instead, you saw that money flowing into the legislative campaigns and into the third party groups that are involved in those campaigns. And so that's why we're seeing, you know, these big, you know, six-digit spending in, you know, a dozen or more legislative districts.
Catherine, give me your headlines from the state and house races, maybe even the amendment, too. We can go over the amendment and where that is at right now.
Yeah, that's maybe the most surprising thing I'm seeing tonight is that there was a not very well-known piece on everyone's ballot to vote for an amendment to the state constitution to take away legislators' ability to raise their own pay and give that to an independent commission. Not a lot of people knew about it, but it looks like that's going to win pretty decisively, that yes, they will set up that commission.
Why do you think that's going to win so decisively?
I think the way the question was phrased would appeal to people on either side of the issue.
Yep.
Honestly.
Yep.
Because it was framed in, should we take away the ability for legislators to set their own pay, and people who don't want legislators to get a raise would say, yes, let's take that away. And people who do want legislators to get a raise know that this is the mechanism for that to happen. And so, I think the phrasing and the, lack of general knowledge about the issue, led people to vote yes for it.
We have another call. Chris, let's get to it.
Yeah, both Chad, the AP and also Fox News calling Nevada for Hillary Clinton. So
this was another route, Blois, when we talked about the states that Donald Trump needed to win one along with winning the battleground states for him to win. So, yes, this is a victory for Hillary. But if you're Donald Trump, you're saying, okay, sure, I would have loved to have won that. But I have more paths out there. I'm still in the mix in Pennsylvania. I'm still in the mix in Michigan. And the numbers still skew him at this point, even with this Nevada call.
Yeah, they do. They still, he's, if on states that have been called, it's currently 244 for Trump, 215 for Clinton. And that's on USA Today's site. And then you add in Wisconsin. So they haven't called Wisconsin. They haven't called Michigan. They haven't called Pennsylvania. And they haven't called Arizona.
They have not. Others have called Wisconsin.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. But I'm starting to use them as the barometer because they seem to be kind of in the middle of Fox News and CNN.
Yep.
Of what they're calling and where the vote totals are coming in. So both candidates still have a path. But again, that pivotal lead that Trump has held in Wisconsin that Fox News and others have called, and in my experience in Wisconsin, I think it's very difficult. That makes this possible for Trump, especially if you add in Arizona and some of these states where they split their electoral college votes.
Yeah, and we've talked about the crazy scenario of certain states going to each candidate and remembering that Maine and Nebraska also have a separate single race that could go to the other person. That in Maine, Hillary Clinton will win, but that other electoral vote can go to Donald Trump, and the same thing in Nebraska. Can we get to a 269 to 269 scenario? It's out there. It's possible. We can discuss that. So it gave you kind of an overview of what's going on in the state. Let's do this. Let's get to the congressional races also and then work our way back to Trump, Clinton, and also at the national level, maybe reach out to another guest. Let's go to CBS at this point.
CBS News Special Report, Election 2016.
A realistic path to victory for Donald Trump, with polls closed in all states but Alaska and projected victories in five of the toss-up states, Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, Georgia, and Iowa. Trump has surprised the pollsters and is projected to have 244 electoral votes compared to 209 for Hillary Clinton. CBS News Director of Politics, John Dickerson.
Traditionally, when the approval rating of the president is above 50%, it helps the incumbent party. President Obama's approval rating is at 51.6, I think, is the average. Yeah. That's not helping. It particularly isn't helping in Michigan, where the African-American vote is not turning out.
And Trump did it without some core support in the Republican Party. Correspondent Major Garrett.
George W. Bush didn't vote for him. George H.W. Bush, we are told, did not vote for him. This estrangement that Trump had from the Republican establishment to many was thought to be a weakness. He always believed it was a core strength.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jim Shenaby.
Election Night in Minnesota, sponsored by Hamline University on News Radio 830 WCCO. Election Night in Minnesota, News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 11:34. Chad Harbin, Adam Carter, Jordana Green, Brian McClung, Catherine Tanucci, and Beloise Olson on a night when the race is extraordinarily close, when you look at the seven polls. Brian McClung, I'm going to start with you on this one. The seven polls that were viewed as the consensus polls the last two, 3 days of this race, and they showed Hillary Clinton ahead 46 to 42. That's not one poll. It's the consensus of seven. Let's also look at the Electoral College. I'll repeat, I did not see a single Electoral College projection from any major outlet that showed Donald Trump over 270. There were many that showed her at a higher total, and then the initial James Comey announcement came out a few weeks ago, and it brought her down. If he ends up winning, what is it going to say about the polling and how wrong it was?
Well, a lot of people were saying that this might be an unpollable race, but yet we all love polls.
Yeah.
We're all drawn to
we're
refreshing 538.
Yeah.
We're trying to we act like it's a science, and it's not really a science still. And keep in mind that, you know, these pollsters have a hard time reaching people on cell phones. Right. A lot of people just won't answer calls at all. Right. So who are they polling? And then what are they doing to try to weigh those polls to get to an actual representation of the people who are voting? And so, you know, Trump was saying all along, I don't believe these polls. Well, of course, he was saying that they didn't favor him.
He would at times say, you know, the polls I believe in. Adam, what would he say? Which polls did he believe in, Donald Trump?
The ones that had him in the lead.
In the lead.
Right. He loves those polls. Yeah, of course. Those were
Jordana, who wouldn't believe something if it says something favorable about you, right?
I wonder if this election is still rigged at all, and which states are rigged, and who's counting that's rigged. I wonder what parts of it are rigged.
It's rigged for him, apparently, so yeah. He's going to have a hard time with that. But, you know, he was also saying that this is like Brexit. And watch out, this is like Brexit. They didn't see that one coming, and they're not going to see this one coming. And everybody, you know, just kind of poo-pooed that. But, you know, if he ends up pulling this thing off, I mean, it does feel a lot like Brexit. And it is a lot, it has some of those same characteristics of people who are upset and angry and scared, just kind of, you know, sending a message with their vote, you know, it made it harder, I think, for pollsters to track and get a handle on this.
Catherine, let me give you a scenario. Let's think back. Adam alluded to these seminal moments that Donald Trump would have, and people would say he couldn't come back from it. One of his most recent one was in the final debate when Chris Wallace asked both candidates, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, will you accept the results? And he pushed back, and he took an extraordinary amount of heat on it. Now, he attempted to clean it up the next day. Kellyanne Conway and others attempted to clean it up even more. What about this scenario? What about this scenario where when we finish at some point into the morning, because this is not going to get done in the next 23 minutes, and that Donald Trump is over 270, that it's not Donald Trump who is not accepting the results. It is Hillary Clinton who is challenging the veracity of where we are at. That is a plausible scenario, correct?
I think it's very likely. A lot of these races are so close that I think that both campaigns are going to be watching and have lawyers, like we said this earlier, there's the best lawyers in the country are got their bags packed right now, ready to go to those states where it's absolutely the closest to figure out.
Yep.
I am almost certain we will see legal challenges after tonight, and I think it may be some time before we know who won decisively.
Blois, are we looking at a repeat of 2000? We don't know this yet because some of this becomes irrelevant. If Donald Trump wins Michigan and Pennsylvania, it's over. I guess it's not completely over if the margin is so slim. But we could look at two things, boys. We could look at the state regulation where it's within a margin, or we could look at the Clinton campaign and the operatives that they have already saying, we are seeing problems, irregularities, yeah, and we're going to challenge it that way. And don't you think it would be very rich for the Trump supporters to say, now, wait a second, you're criticizing our guy. Why aren't you now accepting the results?
Well, I think we have to start to look at which states have automatic recounts when they're within a certain number of percentage points. And I believe that Pennsylvania and Michigan, Pennsylvania for sure, could become within 10,000 votes, which I could imagine is a certain percentage that could trigger a recount, Michigan as well. And then I think this does start to look a lot like 2000, especially for the next week or two as we go through those recounts. What I don't think we have is hanging chads anywhere, but we did have some reports of machines not working or not registering certain votes. And what was amazing to me was that we do have voting machines in this country that don't have paper backup.
Yeah, and that is stunning.
And so
how is that possible?
I don't know. After 2000, I don't know.
Let's do this. Let's check in on one of these states that we're monitoring right now. John Micek is with us from Pennsylvania Live, the Patriot News, and John is with us on the state he is covering. John, thank you very much for your time. Where are we at with Pennsylvania as we talk to you now, your time, 20 minutes to 1 in the morning?
Well, it looks like now we're about to see maybe the end of a 28-year-old streak of Democrats carrying the state. As I sit here, Jed, I think they're Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are tied at about 48% apiece in the state. Heard your guest talking. There is, in fact, an automatic recount rule here in Pennsylvania for it's 0.5% or less for a candidate for public office who appears on the ballot in every district in the Commonwealth. You know, it's 20 to 1 in the morning local time here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and we're all sort of on pins and needles. This was not something that a lot of people, that anybody expected that was going to happen going into the evening. Hillary Clinton was up by anywhere between 2 and 4 percentage points if you looked at the polling averages. It was just this extraordinary thing that we've seen repeating itself across the nation this evening. White working class voters in northeastern Pennsylvania, Scranton, which is where Vice President Joe Biden is from, home of those so-called Reagan Democrats, working-class blue-collar whites who were breaking for Donald Trump.
So when you look at the votes which are still out there, because people like yourself who cover this state know this so much better than those of us who are observing from afar, when you look at this, when you look at the trend line, are these areas in Pennsylvania which are more favorable to either candidate, or is it too tough to tell?
Well, if I pull up the Pennsylvania map here, you know, you see the strong Hillary Clinton turnout in Philadelphia. And in some of the collar counties, so-called collar counties, those are those four inner ring suburbs that everyone, I think, watching this stuff on the news has heard so much about in the last few weeks or so, Bucks County, Chester County, Montgomery County, Delaware County. Chester County and Delaware County are they're bluish to purple. And we're, again, sort of working class whites. They're breaking away for Donald Trump. The Republican city, the county chairman in Delaware County said he'd seen turnout like he'd never seen it before. We now know that it looks like that might have, a lot of that may have been breaking in Donald Trump's favor. Again, out in the southwest, Pittsburgh is a traditional Democratic stronghold, but in those southwestern counties, Washington County, Fayette, Westmoreland, which had been coal mining country, again, that ended up being in Donald Trump's favor. So there were, I mean, there were some sort of traditionally blue areas in the state that we saw him flipping red, and you know, it might end up being too much for Secretary Clinton to overcome tonight.
John, were there any polls in the last 2 weeks, let's say, in the state from respected media outlets that showed Donald Trump with a lead?
There were none. In fact, the last two polls, it was the Franklin and Marshall College poll, had Secretary Clinton up by 11 points. There's a 4-point gap in the Muhlenberg College Morning Call, that's a newspaper in Allendale, Pennsylvania, that had her up plus 4 in the final weekend of the race. There had not been a single poll since the primary that showed Donald Trump out in front in Pennsylvania.
And remind me again, the last time a Republican won this state?
1988, President George H.W. Bush.
Someone who reportedly came out and told people close to him that he could not vote for Donald Trump and was voting for Hillary Clinton. There's probably some irony in that also.
There is indeed. There is indeed.
So knowing the state and knowing what's left, how soon until you think a call is made?
It's got to be pretty soon. If you give me 5 seconds here, I can pull up a state map and tell you what's left, but it doesn't, you know, the last time I checked, which is a few minutes ago, it didn't seem like there was that much territory left for them to contest, quite honestly.
And the margin for Mr. Trump at this point is?
I'd seen it. It was let me pull it up for you. I can give you actually up to date.
Yeah, we'll take
up to date numbers in about two seconds here for you. All right, with 96% of our precincts reporting, it's 48-48. Even 2.706 million for Mr. Trump, 2.68 million for Secretary Clinton, and the rest of that to about 3% divided between Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. So we're getting down to it's brass tax time here in Pennsylvania.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, anytime.
We may reach out to him again, Bloy. So let's at the end, John alluded to Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. This is not a Ralph Nader sort of situation, but we're looking at multiple states which are extraordinarily close. Are there going to be the Clinton supporters, if she ends up losing multiple states by very close margins, who are going to say, are you kidding me? You knew you couldn't vote for him. You disqualified him. You had a chance to vote for somebody who you may disagree with, but you knew she was competent, and you voted for two people who had no chance. Are we going to hear a lot of that talk again, or is that well down the list?
I think it's down the list because of the tone and tenor of the race, because they didn't get a lot of attention. Nader got a lot of attention in 2000. He created his own media. I don't think Gary Johnson and Jill Stein got a lot of attention.
Johnson was at one point, but then the Aleppo comment,
right,
and others.
You left him like a bad date.
I did. Yeah, I'm familiar with that too. Right, and it wasn't even that. It was multiple other times when you said, Gary, are you familiar with this thing? It's called knowledge.
Yeah,
and it's with a K. I mean, it's just. So, what do you think, Catherine? Are your sports going to say, come on? How could you pass on who you voted for?
I think so. I have been saying publicly for weeks that if you don't want Donald Trump to be elected, the only option is to vote for Hillary Clinton. Voting for anyone else doesn't accomplish that, doesn't get us there. It gets us to tonight, where it looks like Donald Trump could be elected. And so I think that there was plenty of people who were going to vote for anyone else, never would vote for Trump, but I do think that you'll hear plenty of criticism of people who voted for a third party candidate when voting for Hillary. Had they voted for Hillary Clinton, this would have been done a while ago.
Let's do this. For this segment, we're going to pass on the CBS update, because we can go to Donald Trump headquarters right now. Our friend Jamie Yukes is good enough to join us. You've covered a lot of events over the years. Give me an idea what the scene is like where you're at right now.
Well, Chad, I have to tell you, I was in Florida for a number of years, and so I thought I had seen crazy elections. This may be one of the craziest that I've seen on Election Day itself, where We started out the day, a lot of places projecting that Hillary Clinton would be the president of the United States. And many, many people kept saying it would happen by 9 p.m. Eastern time. We are now well after midnight, almost 1 a.m. on the East Coast here. And, yep, of course, it now looks like there is no other path than Donald Trump as president of the United States. I think what's interesting, I am at the Trump headquarters. When I walked in today, my photographer and I both said, ooh, it's chilly in here. The room was empty. It was quiet for much of the afternoon. Obviously, they let supporters in, but it was very, very quiet for a long period of time. Suddenly, within the last 2 hours, as those returns started coming in, the room began to get very, very full. You now have a lot of people in the room. It's very warm. They are wearing Make America Great Again hats, a number of them. And I have to be honest with you, it's a very diverse crowd. It's something that my producer and I were commenting on. Lots of young people. There are a lot of white people, as we have seen in some of the polling data that's come back, that white Americans seem to have pushed him over the edge in terms of white males, specifically in the exit polling, said that they voted for Donald Trump. A lot of Americans who do not have college educations voted for Donald Trump. But the crowd is somewhat more diverse than I think you would maybe expect here at Trump headquarters. And many of the supporters you talk to say, hey, we actually saw this coming. And you in the media kept projecting something very, very different. But from what we were being told on the ground and at his rallies where there were thousands of people and checking our social media pages, this is exactly what we thought was going to happen.
There are times when it's projected to be a long night, Jamie, when different people from the campaign will come down and speak to the supporters. Is any of that taking place, or is it just the crowd watching the television and reacting when the different networks are making projections, and many of them in favor of their candidate?
Well, that's what I think has been really fascinating. You have Donald Trump here in Midtown Manhattan. He lives at Trump Tower, just a couple blocks away from where he's hosting this victory party, which what looks like is going to be a victory party tonight. You have Hillary Clinton less than 2 miles away. She was going to be hosting her victory party at the Javits Center, just a few miles away. You have these two New York-centric candidates who are going to be here. And, you know, it's just been fascinating to kind of watch. Donald Trump has not been here at all tonight. Mike Pence has not been here at the headquarters at all tonight. We've been waiting to see if any speakers would take the stage. There is a stage set up with a number of flags and a podium. And we were told that Donald Trump would be with his family watching the returns come in, and he would only show up once things have settled and we're done. Our crews over at Trump Tower have not been told when he will head this direction. We do know that there is a plan for him to come here, but that has not been shared with the media. The other thing that's interesting about this space is that half the people in this ballroom are reporters. So I don't know if they just figured that they would leave out some of the speakers because it would primarily be media members in here talking about what was happening anyway, but we have not had one speaker here tonight. It's people watching the televisions, and of course, it is a different network than CBS News that is on the channel, yes, right now. It is a cable network in support of the GOP candidate, Donald Trump.
I believe we call that hometown coverage. I believe that is taking place. One thing the two of us talked about, and I'll finish on this. We were talking a couple weeks ago on your regular appearance, and you talked about when you're traveling across the country and the number of people you would meet who, if you wanted to come up with a typical voter, you would say, well, this person most likely is going to vote for a Democrat, or this person is most likely going to vote for Hillary. And a number of times when you were just making conversation, you or your producer or others were traveling, the number of people would say, no, I'm voting for Donald Trump. If he ends up winning, that is going to be a huge part of what took place tonight.
I also think, Chad, a lot of people didn't want to say who they were going to vote for. I talked to a lot of people across the country as well who, you know, would say to me, like, I don't feel comfortable talking about it, or I don't know that I'm going to vote. And I'm wondering if some of those people who said, I don't know if I'm going to vote, actually did show up to the polling locations and vote for Donald Trump.
Jamie, thank you so much. I know you'll be there for a while.
Got to run.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Jamie Ukas checking in. Let's talk about our state just for a second on the presidential side. We're sitting here almost at midnight, Blois Olson. This state is as blue gets. right? Why hasn't this state been called by everybody?
Clearly, there's still a lot of votes out there. If you look through...
Has anyone called this state?
No.
No. And the margin right now is?
I don't have it on my screen right this second.
Yeah, I've got it up. So we've got 75% of the votes in Minnesota, and Hillary Clinton has 47.6%.
Yep.
Donald Trump has 43.7%. So it's about a 4-point margin right now with roughly, you know, 75% of
the vote. About 120,000 vote lead for Hillary. What I am seeing is there are parts of the state, primarily southern Minnesota, western Minnesota, where Republicans are outperforming numbers that they have done in previous years. So Tim Walz has a very close race.
Yep.
Wasn't on anybody's radar. Colin Peterson's race is very close. That wasn't on people's radar. So that tells me that those are the, that's the reason we haven't called it yet, is because those are the votes that are still waiting to come in to see if those start to surge ahead. Rick Nolan is ahead right now. And
what percentage of the votes are in the Nolan Mills race?
And that,
and we know that's going to be the last most likely for it to come in.
That will be the last. Nolan is up 51.8% to 48%, and there's 60% of the votes in. Nolan has a 9,000 vote lead.
And the margin was extraordinarily close.
Yeah, it was. And based on kind of the legislative races that have come in from that area, I'm estimating that most of the range, the iron range, is in. In the last few cycles, we've had to wait for Duluth to come in, which would arguably favor Nolan.
Yeah.
And so that might be a place where the ground game did work if Nolan does prevail. But Colin Peterson is only up by 7,000 votes, and Tim Walz is only up by 2,500 votes.
And Catherine, the opponents of these two established congressmen, they have to thank Donald Trump and the momentum he has brought in allowing that. I'm not dismissing what they have done. There's no denying it. But they,
honestly,
but
I can't even think of the candidate's name in the first district. So Jim clearly, Hagedorn. Okay, thanks. Like, yeah. I mean, like, I don't think he's done that much. I think that he has everything to owe to Donald Trump for the margin that they're at right now. You know,
I mean, that wasn't viewed as a close race at all,
I
right?
I hadn't heard one Nobody. Person mention it. No one had mentioned it. Congressman Walz has been fantastic representative for the district. He fits the district really well. He's well known. He's very popular. I didn't hear one person mention that race as something to watch.
And Colin Peterson has been a congressman for how long? I mean, it's
a long time.
Right?
And he has held important leadership
positions. This is not a far left congressman. This is the type of congressman who could work with both sides, and that's why he's had so much success. Right?
Well, they didn't even recruit a real candidate. I mean, the guy who ran just kind of raised his hand and said, you know, I'll run against him. He's the guy who's run against him. I met him one time because he was on a political show that I was on. It seems like a nice enough guy, an earnest guy. But
you might be calling him congressman by tomorrow.
I know, right? I better figure out if I got his phone number when I met him.
He'll call you. He
is relatively new to Minnesota, even.
This is Dave Hughes, right?
Dave Hughes. And, you know, he decided to run just kind of out of the blue. And, yeah, he's got 49% of the vote against a guy who's been in Congress since 1994.
Think about this.
So it's remarkable.
Adam, you may not have a Donald Trump victory in Minnesota, but it's much closer than expected. But Donald Trump might play a factor in potentially swinging two congressional seats that nobody saw coming.
Clearly. I mean, that's the impact here. As you mentioned, I mean, the blue, when you look, and just the fact that it's midnight and we don't have the results yet for Minnesota that hasn't been called, I mean, that says something too, I think.
Yeah, right. And I mean, you think of 2004 when the Bush campaign did try vigorously to swing this state but did not do it effectively. And again, Trump may not win here, but the effect and the help he has given for Republicans cannot be denied. We are going to be here until we have a better idea where we're at the federal level, at the state level. We'll pause right here, hear from CBS, and return in minutes.
Minnesota's Election Station, News Radio 830, WCCO.